Welcome to Insider Insights, where we dive into hot topics facing the financial services industry. Today, Kartik Sekhthaval, LIMRA and LOMA's Chief Information Officer, and Paul Tyler, Chief Marketing Officer at Nassau Financial Group, level set the state of AI in the insurance industry.
I am super excited to be here with my friend Paul Tyler. Paul, I'm super excited because like I said to you, you're probably one of the smartest, most pragmatic CMOs that I know. I am really excited to talk to you about AI, specifically AI in insurance and where we are and where we've been. How are you doing today?
I'm great, Kartik. And, you know, to invite me onto a podcast to talk about AI, We could do a 3-hour show on this. Maybe give one of these other podcasters a run for the money, but I won't do that.
You know what, Paul? If you and I start talking AI, we could probably continue for many, many weeks, and it's not just 3 hours. So I know, just curious from your perspective, you've been in the industry for a while. AI in our industry is not new, right, Paul? We've been doing AI across the value chain for a good long while. Why is it that AI has occupied our hearts and minds as much as it has over the past 12 to 15 months?
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, 12 to 15 months. I think with ChatGPT, I think launched the end of November 2022. You think about that. That's, I don't know, depending on when the show comes up, maybe 580 days. And look, it fills my inbox with emails on television. So I think... I think this technology, I think, is one of these waves of technology where if you get into it and understand it, you can see how many parts of our business can be dramatically impacted for the better. And I kind of liken it to a key you put in a door to open up some technology that has been sitting there forever. As you mentioned, AI has been in our insurance space for a number of years, you know, with predictive underwriting, a lot of analytics behind it. But it was all kind of, you know, you had to be a data scientist, you had to be a PhD, you know, you had to have been a rock star programmer to actually put any of this stuff into production. And now suddenly, you know, carriers can do this. It's something we can use.
Yeah. I think the cost of entry for generative AI has made it so easy, right? It's effectively democratized artificial intelligence for masses, right? The other thing that, you know, you've heard me say this before, I do fundamentally believe that any technological advancement that actually takes root in our personal lives and then goes into our professional lives has a lot more staying power, right? And which is why hopefully no one out there is using a BlackBerry. I mean, we all loved our BlackBerries, but let's face it, right? It was completely disrupted. So I think that's number one. Number two, generative AI. I mean, think about, you mentioned ChatGPT, Paul. I remember you and I having a conversation about ChatGPT sometime in 2023. Would it take 5 days to reach a million users? 5 days to reach a million users, right?
Insane. How quickly this has been adopted. And you are right. It's interesting. The waves of technology that seem to totally disrupt businesses over the last, you know, 10 or 15 years have all come from the consumer side.
100%. I mean, think about the march of ChatGPT itself, right? 100 million users in 2 months. And it took Facebook, what, Paul, do you remember, like 4.5 years to get there?
And we thought that was a game changer.
No, seriously. So I think generative AI is here to stay, and it's thrust artificial intelligence into prominence, right? I think I've shared this with you. One of my favorite LIMRA statistics research is around underwriting, right? And the use of AI in the underwriting space. In 2017, when we first started tracking AI for automated and accelerated underwriting, it was about 50%. Less than 50% of carriers had some level of AI in their underwriting programs, right? We refreshed that benchmark in 2021, published in 2022, and that number jumped to 93%, Paul. So the AI revolution was ongoing within our industry, and then generative AI just thrust it into the common lexicon.
Yeah, I also think at the end of the day, you know, fundamental business economics will drive adoption. You know, who wants to hire more underwriters to review more cases? Would you like to hire, Kartik, would you like to hire more, or would you like to keep the same group you have and have them make them more efficient? And I think when a company has to make a decision like that, the decision is clear. But it doesn't happen, you know, as you say, it's not a straight line. It's a, there's a curve. And I think we're at the, a huge inflection point at this moment.
I agree with that, Paul. So one thing I will say about AI and generative AI, right? And I've said this to executives across our industry, AI, generative AI is not a play for hiring less people or reducing headcount, right? It is a productivity play, right? Imagine what you can do with 10% of your day back, right? 20%, 30%. I mean, the promise for generative AI is just that, to be able to give you time back into your day. And if there are rote, repeatable operational things that you do as part of your job, it is more than likely that those will be automated by virtue of AI, right? In the next several years. So I think our industry stands on the cusp of significant transformation, as do we as a species, thanks to AI. So Paul, maybe here's a question for you, right? What, you know, we've talked about AI, we've talked about generative AI over the past several months. Let's come to today. What role is AI currently playing across the insurance landscape?
Well, it clearly has, I think, won over the heads of the minds of a lot of people in this business. Hearts, I'm not so sure. I think we've got attention, which is good. I think the level of which the industry has embraced this, I think it only varies by company. It varies within companies. You know, there's certain units that I think are jumping on this stuff. I think marketing, you know, this is something you can immediately use in a marketing area and do some just incredible stuff. I think some of the other areas there are, I first of all, I think this will touch every single area of our industry. Yeah. I'm not sure how fast it will. You know, is it 1 year, 2 years, 3 years? Guarantee you it will impact everyone everywhere. But I think we're really in sort of that storming, norming phase of talking about transformation. I think you'd agree.
Oh, 100%, right? And I think it also depends on carriers. I will say, I mean, we have the LIMRA and LOMA AI governance group, right? So we started this group, what, Paul, back in late December, early January. We have now up to 72 business and technology senior executives that we meet on a monthly basis, last Friday of each month, Paul. And we're trying to figure out what good looks like for our industry, right? What are the best practices that we can bring to bear, co-create for our industry? What are the use cases in play? What are the use cases that are actually seeing value? How do you measure value? All of these are big things for us to solve. What's most interesting to me in terms of AI adoption, no matter how progressive organizations are in their digital practices, right? Because everybody's been doing digital transformations. No matter how progressive organizations are in their technology stacks, no matter how many legacy systems you are, writ large, every single carrier has doubled down on vibrant use cases around AI. And I think that's remarkable. So when I talked about hearts and minds, Paul, maybe the minds of everybody, certainly my heart, right? Because I do see the significant value proposition that that is going to emerge from this across the value chain.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like you talked about the consumer use of ChatGPT. I found that people close to doing the work are in love with the possibilities. It's interesting. The best use cases have come from people who are literally on the front line of sales, front line of taking phone calls, front lines of doing financial analysis. I think what will set companies apart as they implement it is what's happening at the CEO level, what's happening at the C-suite level. Because to really implement this stuff and put it into production, you got to make a lot of changes in how your business strategy, thinking about your HR, how you're training people, thinking about how you're actually deploying some of these things. I mean, you know, the rules of deploying an application 10 years are night and day different than putting one of these things into play.
Yeah, 100%. See, you know, AI, you and I have talked about this before. AI is just a tool, right? It's a technology. It's a really sophisticated tool and technology, right? But at the end of the day, it's a business strategy enabler and not a replacement of anything, right? So how you implement that is going to be the key. And Paul, we've seen this through the AI governance group. I think what generative AI has done, it has allowed CIOs to have a 360 perspective of all AI activities within their firms, right? So as you know, Paul, I'm preaching to the choir, but our industry does one thing better than most, which is operate in silos, right? So we've gone ahead and built up vibrant digital practices, digital AI practices within underwriting, right? No one told finance, then we've done some AI stuff in actuarial, but no one told marketing. And we've effectively established these AI fiefdoms for the past many years, which generative AI has cured, right? It's allowed us to get a 360 perspective, and only then can you achieve economies of scope and scale. But to your point, this has to be championed from the C-suite on down across an organization, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, you're absolutely right. I think the group you pulled together is phenomenal. It's been great. I think you've got a very interesting cross-section of disciplines on your policy. And I'll date myself. I remember when, oh my gosh, the internet comes around. And I remember sitting in the discussions of, do we really need a website? That was the first question. Second question was, well, does Kartik really need the web on his desk? Let's do a CBA for that. And I see a lot of parallels between that time and this time. Like, Kartik, can you imagine being, oh yeah, my job, I'm in charge of the internet at the company. Silly, right? Now,
you remember a job called webmaster?
Yes. Yeah. Right. So, there are echoes of the past, but it's a different, it's a different era, different technology, but humans are always gonna be humans in how they do this. So I think, and just sort of step back, I think the NAIC was very good in saying, let's require all of these companies to have AI committees to your point. This is something where you can't just let something sort of peck away at one side of the business without understanding the implications, on another side of the business. So good news, we've got a committee together. The bad news is, oh my God, committees are hard. They're hard.
Yeah.
Right. And I find in our organization that, it can be, and I don't want to cast aspersions on anybody in AMI, the company, but it's also a good excuse to say, oh, the committee will solve this.
Right.
I'm in, data security. They are going to handle it. They are going to come out with you.
Yeah.
You need to change your job. You need to go out and take these courses. You should take this time, this little interim. We got a little bit of a window before we know the wave's coming. Now's the time to get ready for the storm. Take the courses, learn, try this stuff on your own. So I think it's great where everybody's doing it together. It's just also be aware that, sometimes committees, it means nobody's accountable. Nobody can say yes. A lot of people will say no.
What is that John F. Kennedy quote? It was the best time to fix the roof is when the sun is shining. Right?
Exactly.
So I think
for love it.
Right. We need to prepare for AI. Now, I also think, Paul, there is going to be an inflection, a little bit of an inflection, right, between general AI. And just for those listening, let's maybe take a second and let's demystify what we mean by AI versus generative AI. Right. So AI is a broad, sprawling field of study, as you know, and includes everything from machine learning to voice and text to speech and speech to text. Right. Generative AI is one manifestation, one type of an artificial intelligence, and it's allowed AI to be democratized, right, across our professional and our personal lives. So I do see an inflection point coming very soon where generative AI is such an integral part of all of our vendor products, right? So whether your firm uses AI or it doesn't use AI, whether your firm builds AI, doesn't use AI, you will be an AI consumer, right? If you have Microsoft Office 365, and you get Copilot 365, right? And that's pretty amazing, right? You can actually give it a few prompts and say, create me a slide deck, right? A PowerPoint deck, like 10 slides and boom, 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 right? It's done. It's, imagine the productivity lift there. So Where I was going with that is you're going to end up using generative AI as just part of the normal course of operation, like we think about the internet today.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, we put together a 7-point plan for 2024 I would describe it as enable, sort of lay the groundwork for the company to get into AI. Plank number five was give open up one of these chat tools to our entire organization. So good stuff happens. Get somebody to raise their hand. They say, we're going to own this thing, IT department. We're going to put it together. Great. I get the memo back. Okay, they maybe are going to turn a tool on like by December 25th. Like, okay, wait till our next meeting. Now, before I even get to the next meeting, to your point, I go into log into Microsoft Copilot and somebody's turned on the Copilot.
Yeah.
Tool. So I talk to the people and I say, well, this is not ChatGPT. And I said, yes, it is. It's already here and you turned it on. Thank you very much. To your point, we can pretend we have control on committees and structures, but to your, Carter, it's here, it's coming. We're not going to be able to turn this stuff off. We better know how to use it.
Yeah, which is why I think most organizations have and continue should focusing on two things, right? Number one, I think establishing some rules of the road and governance is important. Look, lots of organizations, and I would say, you know, just I put a number on it, but maybe 2/3 of organizations have blocked access to public GPT type sites from their corporate networks. Why? Because you don't want somebody with all good intent, right, accidentally copying and pasting your intellectual property or asking a question that divulges corporate secrets, right? That's probably a super inappropriate use of ChatGPT. So whereas most organizations are also working on implementing private versions of public GPTs, right? So most organizations have their internal engines stood up as well. But I think, look, I think guardrails are going to be very important. Educating employees on those guardrails are very important, right?
Yes.
Educating your employees on that, making sure people are AI literate is going to be a critical thing for firms going forward.
No, I agree. I think education is key. I mean, yeah. Education on... Yeah, you know, we tend, and especially if you leave the state, you know, no offense to listeners in the IT or HR department, we tend to say, here's what you can't do. But I think it's, here's what you can do.
Yeah,
I think it's very important. Yeah, by the way, here's what you can't do. Yeah. How do you write a prompt?
Yes.
You know, I've laughed, Kartik, you know, the webmaster job, you know, I remember the big salaries. Now it's, you know, prompt engineer is the latest hot dog. But you know what? There actually is a lot of power in understanding how to create prompts. You know, some people don't know how to Google, you know, how to Google well.
I said this to somebody the other day. People still don't know how to Google effectively.
Yeah, right.
So, the best way to get at maximum, derive maximum benefit from these tools is to understand how to interact with them in a safe and secure manner. Completely agree with you.
Yeah. So I think education is... I think if any organization were to spend, if they said, listen, we're just going to spend $100 this year, what will you do? Education. Open up courses up for your employees so they can understand. And boy, if you have another $100, give them access to a tool they can actually use for work.
Yeah, makes sense. Hey, so let's pivot to today, right? What do you think? What do you think AI is doing currently in insurance? Like, what's at large? Think about the value chain. I know you talked about marketing and that is your prism, but if you go across the value chain,
sure.
How do you think, what teams, what divisions, what use cases, domains are going to be most transformed?
Yeah, I think you mentioned the return. I think we have a lot of people who say immediately, let's jump the CBA, let's do an ROI. Very, very hard to do that today. And you know, one of your members, I think, I wrote this down, Kartik, most of my good ideas come from other people, right?
And that's the value of Limmer and Loma,
it
right?
Is. Everybody's
got good ideas. Let's all talk about good ideas together.
Yeah. Yeah, I won't name the person in the company, but they said, listen, we bucketed these projects under, does it make life better?
Yeah.
You know, give people back 5 minutes of their, you know, give them 15 minutes back each day. That would be really valuable. Bucket number two, does it drive sales?
Yeah.
That's okay. Yes. We don't exactly know how much we think it will. And the third bucket is, does it really change our cost curve? And I think that's the hardest one to do. So I'll kind of walk you through some of the stuff we've been trying. And we started out, Kartik, at the beginning of the year with three POCs, all in the marketing area. Why? Because I had control over it. I could be the sponsor and the person doing it. So it was, the committee was a little easier.
Approval.
Yeah. And also it was all public information, right? Yeah. We were taking stuff that we had on our website, you know, generating. We actually got that POC out to beta in a production environment. We've been getting some really interesting feedback, and we talked about that one later. People know that. I think some of the other areas, I think the next area where I think there's a lot of experimentation going on, I think there'll be payoffs, is the service and area, service and ops area. So we, for instance, we've been purchasing a lot of little blocks of business from carriers. It's interesting. We've got this niche of, listen, if you have some New York, you know, if you got a block of business in New York, you don't want to deal with it, send it to us. Yeah. These blocks are complicated. Like, you know, we purchased one where, you know, sounds like one policy. No. 80 different policy types sold by, you know, three or four different types of companies. How do you educate the call centers to be able to answer these questions? And I'm telling you, we're getting this thing to rip through these policies and be able to answer questions quickly. We've also got some promising, you know, statusing is an interesting problem. You know, where's the pizza when agents start to put the business in here? And, you know, we've got a very conversant chatbot that will tell you not only about your business, but are you important to our business? How important are you? How many times have you rung the bell for our company over the last couple of years? And there's a lot we can do there. So it's not only service, it's service to sales, our product area, real interesting. How do you, you know, we have these sites that everybody looks for, and it's kind of, you know, the price line of annuities and insurance. And how does this product actually work? Sometimes, you know, we all don't fit into the four or five boxes that some of these, you know, companies illustrate our products. Let me actually compare the real language of these policies to each other. So we've actually been able to read through, you know, policy filings to better understand, you know, the differences between the products we're doing. The most interesting one, I would say, was our investment department. Okay, how do you optimize portfolios for very specific products? You know, our the annuities we sell are all 8, 9, 10-year duration products. Well, you want to match the assets with those. Okay, you've got all the capital chart. Okay, yeah, I can get I get this great rate with this, you know, private, you know, credit vehicle, but oh yeah, there's a big capital charge and there's risk. So I've got to diversify my portfolio. Yeah. I've got to figure out an optimized yield across a certain period of time.
Yeah.
It's doing it. The stuff is doing it. It's doing it. You know, we've gotten the LMs to actually do it verbally. We've actually had it write the code for us to optimize the stuff.
See, that's the other thing. Lots of companies are using code assist tools. But you know what, Paul? Let's park here for a minute, right? Because I'd like to tease out some of the more successful use cases that we've been going through. But also, everything good requires some level of guardrails, right? There are challenges that organizations need to know with AI and generative AI implementations. I'd love to tease those out apart. Everybody talks about fairness and transparency with AI, so we should talk about that a little bit more. And perhaps the best way to do that is to come back here.
If you ask, I'm here.
100%. Let's do it, brother.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to LIMRA's Insider Insights podcast series. To hear future podcasts, subscribe at limra.com/podcast.